Happy Thanksgiving, international listeners. I assume I won't get too many downloads in the States today, so I saved up a bunch of international comedic story things for you all who are just celebrating Thursday. From talentrecap.com, James Acaster said, crowds hate it when he makes jokes about Simon Cowell. He said, every gig I've had where anything that's been associated with him has come up and I've gone off on a rant about it, it never gets the reaction that I thought. I think everyone's going to be on board and agree with me, and everyone's always like, leave the shows alone. Those shows are the best shows in the world. You shut up. Don't slag those shows off. That's what makes us British. About Simon, Acaster said, before he was on TV, we thought people were like him were bullies and nasty. Then he goes on TV and everybody started loving it. First of all, they loved it because he was like mean. So it's like, he's the guy you love to hate. Then there were the years where we were like, well, actually, I want to be like Simon Cowell. And now we're just all a bunch of horrible bullies in this country. It's because of Simon Cowell. I hate him. Ricky Gervais has a pound. You guys don't use dollars. I'm leaving it in. I could easily do that over. 10.8 million pound mansion in North London. It's got a tennis court. He says, my partner Jane and I go down to our house all the time, play tennis. We take a boat down the Thames. You should see us trying not to kill anyone, even though we're going 4 miles an hour. I'm not a get a mansion and put a bowling alley and never use it type. I get my money's worth. I used to have Jonathan Ross's court before. Paul Hogan says, in the case of me and the shows I did, it was never designed to hurt anyone. Some people are saying his comedy material was sexist because his show featured beautiful, scantily clad women. He said, I never put them down. I was putting down the lengths that boofheads like me would go trying to attract their attention. Are you watching Ted Lasso, the best show on television, period? Never mind the best show on Apple TV. Vulture wrote about how Ted Lasso's Brett Goldstein found the softer side of Roy Kent. Brett said, I'm a big supporter of Tottenham. There was an incident that happened when Lucas Moura, who's a player for Tottenham, had the best game he'd had since joining the team. He's not from the UK, and at the end of the game, he ran over to the edge where the fans are, and he just stood there. The commentators were like, oh, he's posing, like he was showing off. But he also looked like he was going to cry. Suddenly, the crowd parts, and his wife, carrying their baby, comes to the front of the fans and hands him his baby. He puts the baby down, and the crowd is sort of cheering, and he puts a ball in front of the baby, and the baby kicks the ball a little bit, and the crowd goes, yay, it was such a beautiful thing. I mean, you should look it up. It's really moving. When I watched it, I put a story on it. I don't know if there's a backstory that's seen in real life. In my head, I was like, he's been at Tottenham a while. It was supposed to be a big deal, and I think he struggled when he came here, and then he has that game where he's the hero, and he's done it, and he's home, and fans are embracing him, and here comes his wife with his baby. He's probably had a difficult time with this move and a whole change of life, and I felt like it was him going, it's okay. We're all going to be okay. So that was the idea behind a turning point for Ted Lasso after his wife comes, and then Richmond wins the game, and the crowd starts yelling, wanker, with pride. Maybe he's okay here. Any Americans still out there? You guys there? Go eat turkey. This episode's not for you. James Acaster spoke to Yahoo, and he was recalling the event on White Wine Question Time. Acaster told Kate Thornton he was trying out new material at Tonight at the London Palladium in 2017, and it probably wasn't a good idea. He said, I went on a show called Live at the Palladium, and instead of doing tried and tested stuff, I tried to do new material. To make things worse, he had followed a part of the show where they made one viewer's greatest dream come true. That dream was a woman got a £10,000 check. I almost said dollars again, stupid Yanks. He said they brought this big charity check and gave it to her. They said, what are you going to do with the money, Joan? And she said, I'm going to donate it to the children's hospital. Then they started crying, and then they brought me on with no buffer in between. They said, now welcome James Acaster, which is not how you do it. He said, my opening line, and I stand by this being funny, but I went on and said something like, oh, great. Now I've got to follow that. Everyone's just seen the sweetest thing ever, and I got to be funny. Thanks very much, Joan. But nobody laughed at that. Sounds pretty funny. I knew in the moment that every decision I was making was the wrong decision, and I made it anyway. The Guardian spoke to some comedians about coronavirus and answered the question, should you joke about it? Stand-up Mark Watson said, it's difficult because nobody wants to hear all about it because we're all permanently thinking about it anyway, and that feels stifling. It would be very, very weird not to acknowledge it at all when many comedy shows are taking place in car parks or pub gardens or out in the back of some aircraft carrier, which just intensifies the feeling that you need to address it. When comedian Phil Wong began giggling again as lockdown eased over the summer, he said he generally could not remember my material from pre-lockdown times. Jokes from that uncontagious era might have well as been written in Old English. Even those from earlier in the pandemic feel old hat now because the nature of the crisis keeps changing. And Chortle caught up with Rowan Atkinson. He answered a few questions about Mr. Bean. Hey, Rowan, what are your fondest memories from filming Mr. Bean? He said, I'm sorry to say that I find all filming stressful, but Mr. Bean filming especially so because of the burden of responsibility I feel to make it funny. Of course, you have support from other excellent actors, but whether the jokes work or not tends to be down to me, and that's stressful. However, I enjoy when it's over, and I can enjoy whatever success we have. If an audience finds it funny, then it's been worth it. Did you expect the longevity, Rowan? And he said, I always believed that Mr. Bean had a very good chance of being successful and having longevity, partly because the comedy is mainly visual and partly because Mr. Bean is essentially a child in a man's body across all races and cultures. The behavior of children tends to be the same and is so easily identified and laughed at. What's his favorite episode? Probably the Christmas episode. I also like the church sketch in the first ever episode. And were there any moments when he wanted Mr. Bean to speak? He said, often, which is why he speaks a lot in the first Mr. Bean movie, Bean the Ultimate Disaster Movie, we felt that he had to talk more so that we could tell the story. He talks more in the latest cartoon episodes. I find the way he talks funny. They asked him about the biggest Bean fan base, and he said there was a very crazy video signing session in Amsterdam, Holland, in the mid-90s. There were police on horseback trying to control the crowds, and I was bundled out of the back door of the store into a police car. That is your International Edition Daily Comedy News. If any Americans made it to the end today, I appreciate you. Go have some turkey and watch the Lions and the Cowboys and whatever the night game is. You international folks, happy Thursday. Everybody back to normal tomorrow. See you then.